All right, we Agnostics, page 44, chapter 4. And we learn as we go along. We were recently in Beaufort, South Carolina, and I've been telling you guys all these years that Agnostics was a derivative of a Latin word, and it's not. We had a lady in the front row who was she knew all there was to know about Greek, and she says it comes from a Greek word, without, Gnostic, without knowledge, we who are without knowledge. And to take it a step further, I used to say that atheist was a Latin derivative. It's not. It's Greek. Atheos, without God. Okay? And based on my experience, not my opinion, but my experience, when I'm taking new people through the work, the place that they stumble the very most, far and away, is with this step. And you, Mr. and Ms. Sponsor, future sponsor, and you're taking new candidates through and you're qualifying them, pay very, 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 very close attention to this step, because this is where it all begins. They've got to obviously be convinced that their butts are kicked. But if they don't believe that there's something more powerful than them, it ain't going to happen. It just ain't going to happen. There's no magic in step 3. There's no magic in step 4. There's no magic in step 5. Your real reliance is going to be upon God. And if you can't hook up with 2, and we're going to prove that to you in the very next chapter as Charlie reads the original manuscript. The book is going to tell us if you're not convinced on these first 2 principles, steps 1 and step 2, you ought to reread the book to this point or else throw it away. It's like pissing in the wind. It's going to blow back on you. It ain't going to help you. So, we who are without knowledge.
In the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism or something about step 1 in our program recovery. We hope you have made a clear distinction between the alcoholic, type 3, and the non-alcoholic, type 1, type 2. Here is the only place in this book I have found a pretty much description or definition to the word alcoholic.
If you're with a new person, these are yes or no answers to these 2 questions. Now, if you look on this rack or racks like it, they're going to have a thing, 20 questions, 44 questions, whatever, on alcoholism. There's 2 questions, and here they are, yes or no.
If, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely.
You'll hear them go, well, sometimes, no. Yes or no.
Or, if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take.
Well, sometimes, no, yes or no.
You are probably alcoholic.
There you go. So, that's it. Blank. End of story. Yes. But see, the mental obsession, if when you honestly want to, you find you can't quit entirely, that's stopping for a year, okay? Or if when you're drinking, you have no control over the amount you take. Because see, how long you stayed stopped and how much you drink when you drink are 2 separate entities. They don't have to run together. I can self-will it. Exceptional man, 25 years. But when he picked up, he was right where he left off. He's got the obsession and the allergy. It takes those 2 to qualify. You can't qualify with just 1. I was with a guy, Lincoln and I were with a guy the other day. I said, have you ever left home and decided I was going to have 2 and drank 12? No. I said, did you ever leave home and you decided today, by God, no way, no way, no how I'm ever going to drink or use, and ended up getting slammed and being gone for days? Yes. He is not alcoholic. he begins something and it becomes one of those modular things. He goes from this to that to the other, and he gets caught up with, we qualified him. He doesn't have a chair here. Yes, Chair.
Hey, just my opinion. I felt the same way Bob did for a bit. But when you read this, it doesn't say that one or the other with the exclusion of the other. It just hits either point. Can you identify with either one? It doesn't say just one or the other. It's hitting you from two different angles. So it can be both. It can be this or that you're hitting up with. It doesn't have to be one with the exclusion of the other. Does that make sense?
I believe what they're trying to explain to you is what every example in the book up to this point has tried. They've tried self-knowledge, they have tried willpower, and they have tried fear. Those three components seems to describe how a type 3 drinker tries to control his drinking. Those three things: self-knowledge, self-will, and fear. So, Charlie, if you honestly want to, in other words, if you've tried willpower, if you have tried self-knowledge, have you gotten in trouble enough where it scares you? You find you cannot quit entirely. In other words, I go back to drinking. When I made these solemn vows, I wasn't going to. I'm done, man. No more for me. I've seen the handwriting on the wall. I ain't doing this no more. Then all of a sudden I give in to the obsession and I take that drink. Or, Charlie, if when you do drink, all bets are off. That pretty much qualifies you to this little club we're in. The only reason we say that is because that's exactly how we did it. That's what we did. We tried all three of those things, and they didn't work for us. You answer the questions. If you can control it, good for you. But if you drink again, come back and see us, because we ain't changed the word, and the door will be open. That's what it's asking. You know? Have you tried all the things we've tried, and you failed? We call ourselves alcoholic. Maybe you're probably an alcoholic too.
And if you answer yes to these questions, if that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness, disease, that only a spiritual experience will conquer.
So that just blows out the self-will, the self-knowledge, and the fear. That's not on the table anymore. Not anymore. I believe that's what they're talking about. My opinion. To one who feels he's an atheist or an agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he is the alcoholic of the hopeless variety.
Hopeless variety. Hopeless means what?
You're gonna die. To be doomed to an alcoholic death, or to live on the spiritual basis, are not always easy alternatives.
And you know, alcoholics are such knuckleheads. They'll go, alcoholic death or spiritual principles. How bad is an alcoholic death?
Yeah, I mean, and just like I said yesterday or this morning or something, every guy I work with, I say, somehow we've got to have choices. I'm giving you a choice. You can have the drink or you can have everything. Those are the choices. They don't intertwine the drink or everything. There's no limit of what you can accomplish with God as your director. Nothing. There's anytime you get life done, your master will get you through it without drinking. Anything. You can't dream up a situation that God won't get you through sober. If you drink, this comes off the table.
Skip over to page 45, first full paragraph, lack of power.
Now that was our dilemma.
If we had power, we wouldn't be here.
And we all want power. That's the only reason we're here. try to regain some power.
And I love the way this is worded. We had to find a power by which we could live opposite of die, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. You see that in italics? It's got to be a power greater than me. I was with this person recently, and we were qualifying as to where they were at on their spiritual walk. And I said, do you believe that there's a power more, do you think there's a power greater than you? And they went, yep. I passed the comma. I said, do you believe this power can restore you to sanity? Blink. And they said, what was that? I said, well, I believe that power can work in your life, but it can't work in mine. I said, wow, you're textbook agnostic. Don't you dare call me an agnostic. I said, oh, really? Can work in every... God can hold Saturn on its axis, but it can't deal with my alcoholism. Really? Really? But you got to qualify that. Because believe me, people that, it says a power greater than yourselves. It says, doesn't say a power greater than anything. Because we walk in here and this power, when they tell me I got power, what they're talking about is I still have some good ideas. I'm in desperate mode. I'm not in hopeless mode. Do y'all understand what I'm talking about? So we're qualifying this person. Lack of power was our dilemma. My good ideas are over. And we had to find a power by which we could live because we're dying. We're in a hopeless state. And it had to be a power greater than me. Shortest sentence in the book. Obviously. But where and how are we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about.
You see, the power is the solution. Remember? We just read about the solution. And if we don't have the solution working in our lives, we're still doomed. We're still doomed. We're living in the problem. And we sit around and analyze and spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars asking why, and we're nowhere but still in the problem. The purpose of this book is to get me out of the problem and get me in the solution. And the solution is a power greater than myself. Obviously. Obviously. Because it ain't no man, woman, or child's going to get me sober. It's no federal judge. It's no wife. It's not kids. It's not a job. It's not a new Harley.
Hey.
That stuff ain't going to get you sober, Charlie. It ain't going to get you sober. You don't have the power, Charlie. You admitted that. Okay? If you honestly admitted that, okay, that's a problem, period. So we got to get in the solution. Where do you find the power?
Well, that's exactly what this book is about, it says.
Exactly.
Its main object, this book's main object, is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will, please underline that, solve your problem. What is your problem?
Lack of power. Lack of power is the problem. That's our dilemma. It's not my mind, it's not my physical well-being, it's not my economic status. Lack of it or too much of it. We've talked to rich about rich folks, and we've talked about gutter bums. From the captain's table to steerage, you know? We all suffered from lack of power. So it said what Larry Boyd just read, will solve your problem, singular. What's my problem? Lack of power, period.
Flip over to page 46, we're gonna go three lines from the top. And it says, we looked at this world
of warring individuals, warring theological systems, and inexplicable calamity.
Now, what they're talking about is warring individuals. Those can be anybody. People that are fighting with each other. Warring theological systems. the Protestants and the Catholics, the Muslims and what are those, the Protestants? No. Christians. Huh? It ain't funny how I'm asking an honest question. I don't watch the news.
Philistines.
Huh? The Philistines.
We
with inexplicable calamity and deep skepticism, we looked askance at many individuals who claim to be godly. You notice godly is a small g. They're talking about the Jims. Jim Baker, Jimmy Swagger, Jimmy Jones, televangelists. We looked at these people who claim to be godly. And it says, how could a supreme being have anything to do with it at all? He doesn't. That is man. Believe the way I believe or I'll blow your country up.
If you want to be saved, get on the $100 a month plan.
That's it.
That's the only way you're going to get to heaven. And who could comprehend a supreme being anyhow? Now, these are atheists or agnostics that's asking these questions. We, who have allowed this power in our life, we don't ask those questions anymore. But if God's working in my life, I may have an answer for you. That doesn't dumbfound me anymore. When a guy says, how do you know there's a God? I got an answer for him. Yet, in other moments, we found ourselves thinking, when enchanted by a starlit night, who then made all this? There was a feeling of awe and wonder, but it was fleeting and soon last. You remember when Bill was in Winchester Cathedral for the first time? God showed himself. Then 30 years later, laying on the hospital bed, he showed himself again. That's what he's talking about. Yes, with the agnostic temperament, have had these thoughts and experiences. Let us make haste to reassure you. We have found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results. Even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power, which is God. See, my old ideas is, man cannot do this for me. I can't get a good enough job. I can't make enough money. I can't fall in love enough. He just can't do it for me. I wish he could, because I'd worship you. If you could get this monkey off my back, I'd be your number one fan. But my experience has already shown you can't do it for me. Society just can't do it for me. But in Alcoholics Anonymous, they say, you're right, Charlie. We can't do it for you. But we'll lead you to the one that can. Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another conceptions of God. That was Ebby Stickman to Bill. AA 101, here's your God, Charlie. Here's God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with him. As soon as we admitted the possibility, hope is nothing more than what if. Hope is a spiritual principle behind step two. What if? The possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of all things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps.
Steps 3 through 12.
It's a 12-step program, Charlie. You can't stop on step 2. Half measures will do you no good whatsoever. The most ludicrous thing I can do is be in a 12-step program and not take 12 steps. What in the world am I doing in here? Heck, this is all you people preach about.
But you know, it's like the people that struggle with this step. Here's your qualifier and clarifier. We found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek him. It doesn't say you, the step says came to believe. Either you're willing, either you believe or you're willing to believe. And I've had the great fortune to go behind the doors of treatment facilities, and I get a lot of resistance. And my question to those people who have this denial and this belligerence is very simple. Do you believe that we believe? And every head in this room should be doing this, because we believe. That's some place to begin. Are you willing to believe? So
we're so adamant that we show you what we've done. We're not here to tell you what you ought to do. We just show you what we've done. And hopefully you can relate. Hopefully you'll want to get off that merry-go-round. And hopefully you'll want to join us. If you don't, we'll go find somebody else. You won't hurt our feelings, I promise you. We don't want to lose you. But if you don't want what we have, we don't want to bother you.
We found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek him. To us, the realm of the Spirit is broad and roomy, all-inclusive,
never
exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men.
Remember.
So, everybody but who? There's no but. Everybody.
You remember Larry Boyle was talking about change? Well, this is change. We're replacing these old embedded ideas. You know, I asked my sponsor, David, I have broken almost every law of man, but I have broken all of God's laws, every one of them. Why in the world would he help me? And he gave me the greatest answer you can give a type 3 drinker. He said, because he said he would, Charlie. Because he said he would. You don't argue with that. You just don't argue with that. So, as Larry Boyce said, these are the changes, and these old ideas are being replaced with new ideas. One of them, we didn't need to consider another conception of God. Our own was good enough. Ever how I feel about him, ever how I want to put trust in him, that's my idea. And nobody can fault me for that. The second idea, all of a sudden now I'm feeling the sense of power and direction. Where'd that come from? From your first new idea. That's where it come from. It's open, we believe, to all men. When, therefore, we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God. This applies, too, to other spiritual expressions which you find in this book. Do not let any bias or prejudice you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. At the start, this is all we needed to commence spiritual growth. To effect our first conscious relationship with God as we understood him, afterward we found ourselves accepting many things which then seemed entirely out of reach. That was growth. But if we wished to grow, we had to begin somewhere. So we used our own conception, however limited it was.
You know, I've had people over the years say, I can't find step 2 in the book. Here it is right here.
Clear cut direction.
And step 2, guys, is nothing but a strong suspicion. What if? That's all it is. A strong suspicion.
I now
believe, or I'm willing to believe, that there is a power greater than me.
One short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe, or is even willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he's on his way.
And now here you go.
It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built.
This is the spiritual structure. This is something that Joe and Charlie put together, and this is the arch through which we pass to freedom. And if you'll notice, the cornerstones is either you believe or you're willing to believe. And if you just want to make a beginning and you're sitting there in your chair, ask yourself, do Larry and Charlie believe? And I hope and I hope and pray that you're being with us for this long, you realize that we have a belief in a power greater than ourselves. We couldn't do this work otherwise. We couldn't have this much time between drinks if we didn't. And you know, it's someplace to begin.
But taking these clear-cut directions, you mean you're actually telling me that step one and step two also is a yes or no answer?
That's it.
Do I need a year to really analyze this? Do I? Yes, ma'am.
That's it. Could be.
This is the third time Bill has suggested we go read a spiritual awakening or a spiritual. This time he's getting a little testy.
Please be sure to read Appendix 2. So he's begging us. Let's go over there. Spiritual Experience, Appendix 2. In the third edition, it's on 569. In the fourth edition, it's 567. And what I want you to, and I'm not going to interrupt here, but just understand that Bill hates using the same word twice. He's going to use the word change 12 times, incorporating 7 different words. So what they might want you to change, just say it.
The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheaval.
Change.
Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described.
Revolutionary and change is the same thing.
Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook.
They wrote this because the Bill's story is a little misleading. He gives us the idea that God has to visit you. You have to have something sudden and profound, a burning bush, a white light, a booming voice, sudden. And that's just not the case for the majority of us. It's gradual over time, more of the educational variety.
Yeah, our other co-founder, Dr. Bob, none of that happened to him. I mean, he talks in his story about it took him 4 years for the obsession to drink to get removed from him. Now, he's the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he's honest enough to say, man, it didn't just go away for me. It didn't go away. But I knew if I was working with others, nothing would ensure me sobriety. So that's what I had to do. Okay. Yet it is true, I've already got this. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations,
change,
though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences have been what psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself.
Difference is change.
He finally realizes he has undergone a profound alteration,
change,
in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought on by himself alone. Now, what often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline.
Hang on a second. Did you hear that, y'all? Did y'all catch it? How soon do you take the steps? What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. Huh?
With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Now, most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problem in the light of our experience can recover.
Is it a promise?
Provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. The steps 1, 2, and 3 are very vital to our recovery, but they are not our program of recovery. We got to get there. We got to get these first 3 steps down and believe in them and try to live by those spiritual principles so we can go forward. It tells us right here, willingness, honesty, and open mind. You got to have them, Charlie, or you're still dead in the water. There is a principle which is the bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. And that principle is contempt prior to investigation. If I don't take these 12 steps, all of this stuff is just theory. And I really don't have any reason to share in a meeting. I don't know. I didn't do it. If I don't do what is suggested in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I got no problem. I got no reason to spread my madness in a meeting. I'm here for the coffee, the women, and the eating meetings. That's all I'm here for.
Flip over to page 48. Middle of the first paragraph, faced with alcoholic destruction.
We soon became
Hold
as
on.
Open.
Yes, ma'am.
Sorry, you said
suspicion. Strong suspicion. What if? And we're going to really dive into that in just a second. We're easing up to it.
Page 48, about halfway down the first paragraph. Faced with alcoholic destruction, we soon became as open-minded on spiritual matters as we have tried to be on other questions. In this respect, alcohol was a great persuader. It finally beat us into a state of reasonableness. In other words, we finally became hopeless, not desperate anymore. Sometimes this was a tedious process. We hope no one else will be prejudiced as long as some of us were.
Prejudice, the preconceived idea that disallows new information. Bottom of the page, it says everybody nowadays believes in scores of assumptions for which there is no good evidence, but no perfect visual proof. And does not science demonstrate that visual proof is the weakest proof? Back in the day before we had these stupid things and these cell phones, which are huge computers on our laps and our purses, they had a thing called a slide rule. And that's how they worked out mathematical issues. And back in the day, they took the bumblebee and they put him inside the slide rule and they worked out a mathematical calculation on this guy. And what they came back with is bumblebee can't fly. His body is too bulbous and his wings are too stubby. It's It's what the slide rule said. It's what the mathematician said. It's what the scientist said. The problem with that is nobody told the bumblebee. And he just flies around and does whatever the hell he wants to do. So scientific proof is sometimes the weakest proof. I mean, we're about to get into some real heady stuff here because man has been fettered, normal people, by superstition and old ideas. And then you pour alcohol on that and voila, and we've got some superstitions and some old ideas that have kept us stagnant and damn near killed us. And we're gonna flip over to page 49, last full paragraph.
We have traveled this dubious path, beg you to lay aside prejudice, even against organized religion. We have learned that whatever the human frailties of various faiths may be, those faiths have given purpose and direction to millions. People of faith have a logical idea of what life's all about. Actually, we used to have no reasonable conception whatsoever. We used to amuse ourselves by cynically dissecting spiritual beliefs and practices. Well, we might observe that many spiritual-minded persons of all races, colors, and creeds were demonstrating a degree of stability. They were demonstrating happiness. They were demonstrating usefulness, which we should have sought for ourselves. Instead, we looked at the human defects of these people and sometimes used their shortcomings as a basis of wholesale condemnation.
Wholesale means large scale.
We talked of intolerance while we were intolerant ourselves. We missed the reality and the beauty of the forest because we were diverted by the ugliness of some of its trees. You know, we never gave the spiritual side of life a fair hearing.
Where are we at on time? Are we good up for a break?
We just got a couple more there, boy, and we'll be.
No? Okay. I've lost count of time. I've lost track of reality.
Let's jump down to the last full paragraph on page 50.
And now they're going to be, it says when there are thousands of men and women, they're talking about the early fellowship, the first 100 actually.
Here are thousands of men and women, worldly indeed. They flatly declare that since they have come to believe in a power greater than themselves, to take a certain attitude toward that power, and to do certain simple things.
Steps 4 through 12.
There has been a revolutionary change in their way of living and thinking. In the face of collapse and despair, in the face of the total failure of their human resources, they found that a new power, a new peace, a new happiness, and a new sense of direction flow into them. This happened soon after they wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements.
Huh.
In other words, they took these steps. Once confused and baffled by the seemingly futility of existence, they show the underlying reason why they were making heavy going of life.
Check out this sentence and highlight it. It says, leaving aside the drink question, they tell why living was so unsatisfactory. Alcohol was not the problem. Never has been. I'll say it again. If alcohol is your problem, get detoxed. That's as bad as it's going to get. Alcohol was my solution. When life became impossible and pressuring, I can drink and slide right into a neutral zone. And then, of course, we all know how that ended up. But leaving aside the drink question, this is what the book says. These thousands of men and women tell why living was so unsatisfactory. They were restless, irritable, and discontented. They couldn't make a living. They were living all the things that we're going to talk about on this next page, the bedevilments. Y'all understand what I'm saying? Alcohol, the book is telling us that alcohol was our solution. Leaving aside the drink question, these people tell why living was so unsatisfactory.
But they do that after God has removed the obsession to drink. It's hard to stay sober drinking. I mean, it's just downright impossible for me.
This next sentence, it says, they show how the change came over them. They don't tell us, they show us. You know, how many people in here have got small kids? Grandkids, great-grandkids, gotcha. Okay, you got this kid, and you're sitting at the dining room table, and you say, you know, right down the street here is a little pond, and there's these fish in there, these brim. And if you go down there, and you got a pole, and you tie this hook on, and then you run a bobber up about 3 feet, and you put a cricket or a worm on there, and you toss it out about 12 feet, and you sit real still, that fish will come along and hit that worm, and you pull back. Now, if you tell that child how to do that, what do you think the chances of them are going down there and catching a fish? Not very likely. Take the kid down there and show them what you use, how to tie the hook on, where to put the bobber, how put the bait on, where to throw it, how to sit, and teach a kid. Show them. Don't tell them. And that's what we're talking about here. They show how the change came over them.
When many hundreds of people were able to say that the consciousness or the awareness of the presence of God is today the most important fact in their lives, they present a powerful reason why one should have faith.
I think we need to take a break.
Larry Boy's got to go pee. We're going to take a
break. This is a long section. This is a long
piece. That's fine, brother. Just bust picking
my
at
balls.
Let's take 10.
Y'all come on and go to the bathroom, man.
Glad we caught that magic moment on tape.